off boys as they try to find their way through Never Never Land. What is mundane astrology? Well, mundane astrology is probably astrology's oldest type of astrology. The oldest astrology book was written around 1000 BC, according to Nick Campion. It was called the Enuma Anu Enlil. I'm sure you all have it on your bookshelves. And it basically described the relationship between heaven and humanity. You have to understand that astrology grew when people noticed, and it was probably, I like to call astrology the second oldest profession. Of course, it isn't to be confused with the first oldest profession, except in certain instances. It probably grew when people sat and looked at the sky, not having television or VCRs or HBO. They spent a lot of time looking at the sky, and upon doing so, they noticed that some of the stars moved around relative to the others. And these finally, of course, were given the Greek name planetane, which means wanderers. And they were the stars that wandered around. And they were thought to be synonymous with the gods. Gods equals planets equals archetypes is all a concept which I think is very accessible and easy for astrologers to understand. The concept of an individual horoscope did not really arise until around the time of the Greeks. After all, our word horoscopus is Greek for something that rises. And so they sort of inserted the individual factor into astrology. Mundane astrology used to be the only astrology, that is, the astrology of the whole world, the gods versus humanity in that ancient battle that's been going on forever, was the major subject of mundane astrology. And the concept of a chart for a nation, which all of us are accustomed to using, is a fairly new one. Though Manilius, the Roman astrologer, assigned different signs of the zodiac to different areas of the world. And of course, with the birth of nations, the concept of nations as opposed to a tribal people, the concept of a nation, which began around the time of the discovery of Uranus in 1789 with the American Revolution and French Revolutions, that the concept of the birth of nation added a new tool to the arsenal of the mundane astrologer, namely the chart of the horoscope. The horoscope of the nation. The horoscope of the country in question, which of course became possible when nations themselves began being born at certain times, as ours was. So, to break down and briefly summarize, in mundane astrology there are basically four different types of ways of approaching the future of a large group of people. Obviously, when you're doing astrology for an individual, you can do it for that individual. But if you have a whole nation or you're looking for floods, after all, how many astrologers here predicted the floods in the Midwest? No one. No one. Did anyone see anything written that predicted the floods in the Midwest? Well, as most good astrologers can, I can do it after the fact. And we'll do that in a moment. Any good astrologer worth his or her salt can always predict an event after it's happened. So we'll do that later on. So anyway, in doing mundane astrology, there are basically four cycles that you can use to do mundane astrology. One is kind of the oldest thing. That is simply looking at the planets and how they configure with each other. The ancient study of cycles. And of course, as civilization has become more and more complex, its view of the universe has changed and expanded. So we now have Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, which were not visible to the ancients, and therefore we have more cycles to look at. And of course, as we all know, we are right in the midst of one of the rarest and most critical of those cycles right now, the Uranus-Neptune conjunction cycle. But of course, these aren't the only cycles. In the book Mundane Astrology, Charles Harvey lists 15 major or significant astrological cycles, beginning with the 432,000-year yuga of the Vedantic astrological cycles. And of course, when you're dealing with 432,000 years, I guess that your predictions aren't subject to much review. So you can pretty much say anything that you like. In fact, I guess I can safely predict that during the next yuga that extraterrestrials will land on the White House lawn at last. So that's the first type of mundane astrology, is the astrology of cycles. The second type, as I described, is the chart of the ruler. It used to be, you know, that the ruler was the only person who had individuality, that individualism was not allowed for anyone but the ruler. The ruler was the only one who had the power of individualism. Everybody else was subject to their caste, subject to their profession, subject to their guild, subject to whatever organizations controlled their lives. The ruler could safely state, as Louis XIV did, l'état c'est moi, I am the state. He also said, après-moi le déluge, as you might remember, after me comes the flood. And he was sort of almost aware of the fact that the idea of the ruler being the only individual was fading rapidly during his time. This raises questions relating to democracy. If the ruler's chart, as we'll see when we look at Bill Clinton's astrocartography map, if the ruler's chart actually symbolizes the people, and we'll see that it does very reliably, is there really democracy? Well, I suppose, I mean, after a fashion, when you get to choose between two choices, like, I often point out that individualism has reached sort of an extraordinary point in the U.S. when you can choose between 27 different kinds of mustard in the grocery store and only between Republicans and Democrats in the voting booth. But anyway, putting questioning of democracy aside, which is a vice in which I engage all too often, nevertheless, it still becomes obvious that the leader reflects to some degree the collective will of the people. If he is too dreadful, he will be decapitated, as certain kings have been, and if he's too good, he won't get elected. So that the leader does sort of reflect the collective will. There's sort of a dialectical relationship between the ruler and the rule. The power goes back and forth, and the leaders usually begin to ignore that just before they're about to crash. So anyway, it's the easiest form of mundane astrology to do, because all you have to do is just take your standard astrological rules, which all of you know, and apply it to the ruler's chart and say, okay, this is the chart of the ruler, and therefore this is the chart of his or her nation, usually his, as you probably noticed. The second major means, or the third major means of doing mundane astrology, is the chart of a nation. And of course, I've described that already. Since the time of the discovery of Uranus, it is possible to actually have a horoscope for a country, and these can work if you have an actual foundation date. And of course, I guess most of you know the Book of World Horoscopes, which is this wonderful book that Nick Campion spent, you know, I don't know how long, compiling, which contains every possible chart for every possible country. And using those is absolutely essential for mundane astrology. Finally, the fifth type of mundane astrology is what I call pure mundane astrology. And that is where you aren't focusing it down to an individual, you aren't focusing it down to a nation. This is perhaps a lost art, because this is the astrology that could have predicted the floods in the Mississippi Valley. This is the type where you can say that the god of rain is going into the house of the something or other, and therefore it's going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. Clearly, this type of astrology is not properly studied, and no one these days that we know knows how to do it awfully well. However, in mundane astrology exists, of course, the cycles that I described before, the cycles of Uranus and Neptune and the 432,000-year yugas, and all of those are part of this pure mundane astrology, because it isn't focused down on a particular place or person. A shorter view of pure mundane astrology is offered by the lunations, the full moons and new moons, which astrologers have traditionally used as a means of determining events in a particular area or place. And needless to say, with the advent of astrocartography, with which I'm somewhat enamored, it is made a lot easier to analyze full moons and new moons in relation to place. Now, I don't know if you brought with you your booklets, but if you have, you can turn to page, before you turn, it's actually page 65 and 66, but before you turn, what do you think the planets should have been. Think of a planetary combination of two or maybe three planets, keeping in mind the positions of the planets right now. What combinations of planets would have shown perfectly the floods in the Mississippi? I hear Pluto on an angle. Any other suggestions?
Sun-moon connection.
Other suggestions. Who is the god of rain in the astrological pantheon?
Jupiter.
And why?
Sky god.
Jupiter Pluvius. One of the faces of Jupiter was Jupiter Pluvius, Jupiter the god of rain. So if we're going to have 40 days and 40 nights of rain, we'd expect Jupiter. And for unprecedented, record-breaking, never before in the history of recorded history, that should be which?
How about a
perfect crossing of Jupiter on the IC with Uranus and Neptune on the descendant? Would that satisfy? How about two consecutive eclipses, the eclipses exactly preceding the flood with exactly that over the Mississippi Valley? Would that qualify? It would. Well, if you look on page 65 and 66 of your booklets, you'll see exactly that. Because in the astrocartography map for 1993, how many of you bought the astrocartography map for 1993? The astrocartography source book of Monday maps was three of them, four of them. Well, with that, we can probably print a 100th of a copy next time. Anyway, if you had bought that, and if you had had time to look at it, which I didn't either, you would have seen that for the two eclipses preceding the Great Flood of 1993, that not only was Uranus and Neptune exactly on the descendant, but Jupiter was on the IC, the perfect configuration. Now, if you look at those maps right now, you will notice that they're a little bit moved to the east, that the actual positions of the exact crossings are moved slightly to the east. If you use the exact time of maximum phase, as opposed to the time for conjunction of longitude, it moves them a bit west and makes them even more exact. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so pure mundane astrology is, I think that the astrocartography book of maps is a real useful thing, and I do hope that there are some in the bookstore, I understand, a couple of hundred, and probably could be had for exchange of money. But I have to admit that I did not look at those and say, oh, this means there'll be the great floods. But if you look at it in retrospect, it does seem to be perfectly appropriate. Rob?
In the Church of Life book on weather forecasting, they actually make a distinction between ingress of temperature and lunation from moisture.
Ah.
And eclipses being, of course, a form of lunation, this is exceedingly appropriate.
Yes.
And the IC is the single most important angle of the chart.
Yes. Aha. In back? Okay. Yes, indeed. Well, this is, as usual, our Monday morning, I guess it's called a postcast. You know, we have our forecasts and we have our postcasts. And we're very good at postcasts, far better than forecasts. Look, we're awfully short on time, so let's move on. I'll just point that out, that the unprecedented floods of 1993, and I have noticed over the years that the eclipses in the astrocartography mundane sourcebook are by far the most powerful maps. By the way, also, and this is significant, in the 1992 the Capricorn ingress tropical, called the winter solstice. In the map for the 1992 winter solstice, those same planets were also over the Midwest. So you had the stage set by the 1992 solstice and then culminated by the eclipses of May and June. And it's exact because just after that second eclipse, it started to rain. And of course, as we know, it didn't stop for close to 2 months. Okay, moving right along, we still have to get to Bill Clinton, and I have to say something about the Uranus-Neptune thing. It is not possible to overestimate the importance of the Uranus-Neptune conjunction for the mundane forecast for the rest of this decade, the rest of this century. century or even the rest of our lives. This is one of the absolute critical cycles of all time, and I have a whole lecture which I do on it, which I will not try to recapitulate here. But briefly, well, I will try, but briefly, Uranus stands for the ideology of the individual. It is tied up very closely with the concept of, quote, free enterprise and capitalism. The U.S. and Western, quote, democracies, unquote, are very strongly under the influence of Uranus, where the whole point of the system is so that each of us can do what he or she is best suited to do. In fact, we astrologers have unknowingly, or perhaps unconsciously, changed astrology from its ancient form to what it currently is, which is a means of identifying and reinforcing an individual's most individualistic traits and encouraging them to develop those. So that our astrology, our Western astrology, especially the kind practiced at the NCGR, is particularly an astrology of Uranus. And in fact, we can see that when Uranus has been going through Capricorn and all the things that have been going on, including Mr. Hand's Arhat project, where he's editing and supervising the translation of ancient astrological texts. What a perfect thing. At last, something good came out of Uranus and Capricorn. Neptune is, of course, the concept of collective responsibility. And it also is based on the concept that humanity can be perfected and that we are obligated to surrender some of our autonomy to this end. It is the romantic notion of the whole is more important than the individual parts. And therefore, it is not surprising that a book called The Communist Manifesto came out shortly after the discovery of Neptune, 1 year to be exact. So what is Uranus conjunct Neptune going to do? Uranus and Neptune are the opposite poles of an irreconcilable dichotomy from which the spiritual struggle for idealism comes. Their cycles reproduce the striving of the human spirit for perfection, alternating between the extremes of individualism on one hand and surrender of individuality to the collective on the other. Their cycles reproduce the lunation cycle. That is, you can see the lunation cycle as Uranus and Neptune go through their phases. Uranus square Neptune, Uranus opposite Neptune, Uranus square Neptune, Uranus conjunct Neptune again. And the conjunction phase, which we are currently in, is like the new moon. In fact, we could say that we are presently experiencing an eclipse of Neptunian idealism. That the idealistic light of Neptune is lost in the older, more solar individualism of Uranus. That we are seeing now that communism, quote, has fallen, unquote, a period of time when only Uranus seems to be there, and that Neptunian idealism, a responsibility for the collective, has been eclipsed. Now, as we know, the domination of either side of a dichotomy creates the monsters. And the USA, with its rampant individualism, is now reaching a point where behind this hotel, there is a hotel called the Golden West Hotel, in which you can have a room for $5.95 a night or $35 a week. It almost joins this building. You can see it out of your windows. And I don't think very many of us have noticed it. But in an age where individualism has taken the point, and you can imagine the lives of the people who live in that hotel, or perhaps you can't, but in an age where this type of individualism has reached that point, clearly something more is going to happen. So that in the rest of the 90s, which are going to reproduce the conjunction of the Uranus and Neptune, we are going to see individualism have to go through some changes. It's very interesting that the development of socialism has followed exactly the Uranus and Neptune cycle. The first quarter, which occurred in 1867 to 72, was the first Internationale, the Paris Commune. The opposition was the Mexican and Russian revolutions in 1907, and the third quarter in 1954 was the height of the Cold War. So you can see that the Uranus-Neptune cycle, and you can go into much greater detail on this as Graham Jones did, that the Uranus-Neptune cycle is indeed the cycle of the isms, the individualisms versus collectivism and their conclusions. But anyway, to move right along to Bill Clinton, see how he fits in on all this, we are in the dark of the moon of idealism. Just as you cannot see the moon when the moon is new, you cannot see Neptune at this particular time. But that does not mean that there is not going to be in the near future a new resurgence of idealism that will begin with the tiny crescent of a new unborn ideal of human perfectibility. And where and when that will be is still impossible for us to determine. However, in the vacuum that is left by the collapse of idealism, and it rightly collapsed, having become totally corrupt, but into that vacuum, fundamentalism goes. The reason that fundamentalism occurs after every Uranus-Neptune conjunction of any consequence is that into the vacuum of the dead idealism, only fundamentalism can go. Also, curiously enough, with almost every Uranus and Neptune conjunction, there's also a Saturn-Pluto aspect of some sort, exactly as we're having now. And so, into the vacuum created by the death of idealism flows fundamentalism, which is something that we'll have to deal with for the rest of the century. And this, in fact, brings us right to Bill Clinton, because, as you know, his sun is opposite the USA moon, and both of them are being squared by Saturn and Pluto at this very time. So the whole thing with Bill Clinton is that he, at this particular point, is typifying this crisis consciousness between as fundamentalism and rigidity, as those dreadful old men in Congress block every attempt to even modestly reform things. As that goes on and on and on, you can see how the fundamentalism, the rigidity, the standing tight of Saturn, the refusal to budge, the inflexibility is filling the void that is left when the idealism of Neptune has been eclipsed. So, where does that leave us in transits to the U.S. chart and things of that sort? Well, we can actually sort of forecast the future of the world to some degree by looking at the chart of the U.S. and then, as I also said, by looking at the chart of Bill Clinton, because even though he is certainly a fragile vessel for the will of the collective human aspiration, he is in fact the only one we have, which he never tires of pointing out when he's up against it. So, as a fragile vessel of the aspirations of humanity, he is, of course, the only one we have. It has been shown again and again, or I think that perhaps among the most consistent and reliable factors that has been produced by astrocartography is presidents' Mars lines. Any president for whom we have a reliable birth time, and that includes everyone since Roosevelt, except Reagan, has gotten into some sort of war situation under his Mars lines. And so it really does kind of seem that there are war situations attached with the president's Mars lines. Up until now, though, I've been somewhat puzzled by the fact that not all of the wars, for instance, George Bush was only in office for 4 years, he got us involved in 3 wars. This sounds like kind of a rewriting of the Gertrude Stein opera, 4 Saints in 3 Acts. This was 3 wars in 4 years. So, and clearly all of those weren't under George Bush's Mars lines. In fact, the most puzzling and the most dramatic was the Persian Gulf War, which occurred right under George Bush's Jupiter line, which goes right through Baghdad. And I thought, Jupiter line? Really? Whatever caused that? It was then that I noticed that George Bush's Jupiter is in 14 degrees Sagittarius, and that in October of 1991, that there was a station of Mars in 14 degrees of Gemini. And this tipped me off to something. What about the stations of Mars placed in the context of the chart of the ruler? And if you start looking at that, you'll see some very surprising things. you'll see that the stations of Mars in the chart of the ruler show an amazing correspondence to wars and conflicts. And this is the first time, actually, that I have mentioned this observation in public, so those of you who are interested can go home and play around with it for a while, because I'll probably be mentioning it again. Among the examples I have is that, of course, there was Bush's station of Mars exactly on top of his Jupiter over Baghdad, which, by the way, occurred 2 days before he resolved to make the war that he did in the Middle East. That is to say, that station was October 22nd, 1990, he actually gave the orders to begin the war on October 20th. Of course, we weren't told about it until after the election, naturally. Carter had a station of Mars opposite his Tehran midheaven on January 20th, 1976. Nixon had a station of Mars on September 19th, 1973, conjunct the ascendant in Saigon. Johnson had one conjunct his ascendant in Saigon on April 19th, 1965. And these are all within an orb of about 2 degrees. So it does seem that the Mars stations in the local charts of the ruler of the country is quite an important thing. So I guess you're interested to find out where Bill Clinton's are, eh? Well, we'll get to that. Before we get to that, there's one more little thing that I'd like to describe. And that is that I have noticed, I'm perhaps not the only one, that there is an extremely important degree axis that is tied in with petroleum wars and Mideast crises, which of course are basically the same thing. This is from 17 to 27 degrees of Leo. This is a critical degree area. And if you look at natal charts or country charts for that degree area, among those that you find is Reza Khan, who was the father of the Shah of Iran, Israel, the chart for Iran, the new chart for the Ayatollah's Iran, the chart for Jordan, the chart for Kuwait, the chart for the Iran-Iraq War, Truman, Harry Truman's chart, Oman's chart, the invasion of Kuwait chart, and also if you add precession, even the charts for Alexander the Great and the Islamic calendar. All of these have either Mars, Jupiter, or Uranus in the very degrees that I've just described, from 17 to 27 degrees of Leo or Aquarius. So Mars, and every time that Mars goes into Leo, you financial astrologers, the price of oil often goes up. Because of tension and problems in the Mideast. So Clinton has his son in this very degree. Clinton has his son in 25 degree Leo opposite the USA moon, which shows that we are always going to get involved in that area, as we always do. And of course, as I described before, the Saturn-Pluto square is activating this area. And this is what is really going on. You know, of course, I think you've probably noticed, that the media does not always tell you everything that's going on in Washington. Have you noticed that? Yes. In fact, it's almost as if they do everything they possibly can to keep you from finding out what is really going on. In fact, there's a leftist commentator who says that in the days of Pravda, you know, the organ of the Soviet oligarchy, that they had it better than we do, because when you read something in Pravda, you knew it was a lie. And in fact, you could sort of read between the lines, and you could figure out how the lies they were telling you sort of disguised what the truth was, and the lies that they told you sort of formed a form around the truth, and so by observing the lies, you could sort of indicate what the truth is. In our system, we're told that we're being told the truth, and many of us actually believe it, when in fact it is all lies anyway. And so we don't even know that we're being lied to. I don't know if that's better or worse, but anyway, I suppose we'll figure it out. So let's get into Bill Clinton's astrocartography map. And it is also in your book of handouts. Let me get this thing off here. And Yes. I use a couple. In fact, the whole issue of is there one chart that you use for the U.S. is, I think, a bit of a moot point. You have to use several and find the common points. But the chart that I prefer for military activities is the Boyd chart, which is July 6, 1775, 11 a.m. local mean time in Philadelphia, and that was 1775. And that is the chart of the declaration of war against Britain, and that's good for military activities. For the USA and its people, I use the Sagittarius Rising July 4th, 1776 chart. Okay, so we see that Bill Clinton has an interesting set of Mars lines. In the first place, his Mars on the ascendant goes through Guatemala, or extremely near to it. His Mars on the midheaven goes through Scotland and Wales, where I suppose we'll have a terrible war at some point. right through Spain, Morocco, Mali, the Ivory Coast. But this area is quite interesting. And it also goes through eastern India, Tibet, and the Soviet Union. And finally, Mars on the IC goes through New Zealand, who really ought to put up a hell of a fight. So I do not want to say that we're going to have wars in all those places. In fact, that sort of brings up the question of which of those places is actually going to be activated. My guess, looking at all the stuff that I have, including the astrocartography source book maps for 94, is that Iran, which isn't even on this list, is going to be a very serious issue for Clinton. But finally, the real critical one is going to come down in Tibet and the northern India region with China. As we know, George Bush had a quote, special relationship, unquote, with China. And I think that Bill Clinton is going to have to pick up the pieces of that. We know that when they mowed down all those people in Tiananmen Square, George Bush had been on the phone with them for weeks, and it is clear they would not have done so without his agreement. So Bill Clinton has to pick up the pieces from the fact that that George Bush allowed this oligarchy to remain in power in China. And so the confrontation has been postponed, but I think it's going to take place in this region, probably around 1995. In fact, I've already submitted my lecture talk for UAC 95, which is going to be in May 1995, and it's about the current war, which will then be going on in the Middle East. Let's see if I have made a total fool of myself again or not. However, this issue of Mars stations, I think, is really important, and I'd like to do something with that before we go. The only Mars station that Bill Clinton has enjoyed during his time in office, during his brief but happy time in the Oval Office, is the one of February of this year. And again, I have outlined the Mars. This is the Mars station on Bill Clinton's map. And as you see, the Mars midheaven goes through Guatemala. Shortly after he took office, there was a crisis in Guatemala, and the president was deposed and the army was about to take over. Of course, you know, Guatemala is a wonderful recipient of American aid. They get, I don't know how many million dollars a year from our taxpayers, which they buy guns with to mow down their peasant population. So it's kind of a problem, and indeed it became a problem, and I think we'll see more of it. But strangely enough, the problem that occurred in Guatemala was kind of resolved. It didn't really turn into a thing. Also, notice this Mars descendant line. It goes right through Nigeria, where there have been equal problems. Thank you. Where there have been equal problems over the past few months, with Mars on the descendant going through Nigeria. Niger and Libya have not been a problem, but this Mars line goes through Macedonia. And at present, there are 200-odd American troops in Macedonia. It also goes through Georgia, where there's a constant revolution going on in various other parts of the Soviet Republic. Moreover, this Mars IC line once again goes through this very sensitive area in eastern India, Tibet, and Bhutan. So keep your eye open for that one. That's the only one that hasn't happened. And I think that the number of direct hits on this particular map shows the power of the concept of a Mars station in the LIDAR's map. Yes? The sun going through Mogadishu on this map? On Clinton's natal map. Yeah. This is also in your book. The sun going through Mogadishu. I think that, yes, it does. In fact, also his sun goes through Japan. And knowing that his sun is presently being opposed and squared by the Saturn-Pluto square shows exactly what Clinton has been putting up with, that he has this incredible situation where he can't move. You know, I've always said that Saturn and Pluto are the aspect of constipation. You know, like you want to move it, but it just won't move. And this is exactly the situation that he's got in both of those places. He's sort of stuck. He can't move. And Japan particularly, he's going to do very well in Japan because he has his son on the IC. He's going to also probably do well there, but certainly not this year. I know that I'm not the only astrologer who has asserted that this year is going to be hell on wheels for Bill Clinton. And certainly it has. Almost everything he has done has turned into a problem. But I think also, perhaps I am among the few who has noticed that in 1995, his progress to midheaven conjoins his sun. And this is going to be a time when he takes real leadership. Unfortunately, I feel he will take real leadership because it will be in a military situation, as so frequently seems to be the case. So that it's going to be difficult for Clinton. He's going to have a hard time with this Saturn-Pluto square. When that is over, then things are forming for a military confrontation again in the Mideast, which will probably be in full flower in 1995. So, have a nice day. Are there any questions? Yes. So it is. Also, I forgot to point out, which is obvious to, I guess, just about anyone, that he has a Mars-Neptune conjunction, which is real different from George Bush's Mars. George Bush had Mars in Aquarius, a powerful thing. Clinton is a Venusian person. He has Libra rising, he has Venus on the ascendant. Even though he's a Leo, he's very strongly a Venus type of person. In this, he is like Jimmy Carter. And therefore, like Jimmy Carter, there's actually some progress toward peace in the Mideast under Clinton, as there was under Carter. So that is going to be the case. The thing is that his Mars operates differently. He does things covertly. He does things secretly. Mars conjunct Neptune in the 12th. However, that also is war over oil, Mars and Neptune. So even though he is trying to avoid all that, I think that it's probably going to catch up with him anyway. Other questions, sir?
This mountain, how about now?
It was kind of a weird map, actually. I had taken the Mars lines for the Mars station and superimposed them on Bill Clinton's map and photographed it. So that's correct. It was sort of a combination of it was Bill Clinton's map with a Mars station. See, there's a thing called cyclocartography. Cyclocartography gives you the transits and progressions which you overlay on top of your astrocartography map. No, it isn't. Only his natal maps in the book. Other questions? Yes. Yes, Macedonia is a new country, as we have so many. It is right about here. On the Mars transit map, there was a line going through Macedonia, but it isn't on this map. However, Bill Clinton's Progress Mars, by cyclocartography, as a planet progresses, it moves eastward across the chart. And his Progress Mars Midheaven is presently right on top of Macedonia. And also the station of Mars occurred in exact paran to that last February. This is getting a bit technical. Other people? Questions? Yes. Oh dear, well now this is getting kind of complicated. Let's just say that this is Bill Clinton's natal birth chart, and the Mars lines on his chart are the places that Mars was angular at the moment of his birth. Now the Mars station is the time in 1992 when Mars was stationary, and if you did a relocation chart for Bill Clinton in Macedonia, Mars would have been on the ascendant in that chart, transiting Mars. So there's actually a transit Mars, and then there's a natal Mars. And the transits you can see on something called cyclocartography, which is an overlay that gives you transits and progressions. Other questions? Well, I know you've all been tremendously cheered up by all this, I guess you can book your reservations in the Mississippi Valley or Iran for 1995. See you all later.